I invite you to stand for the reading of the word from Luke chapter 10, verses 28, or 38 rather, through 41.
Now, as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him.
She has a sister named Mary who sat at Jesus' feet and listened to what he was saying.
What? But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself?"
Tell her to help me.
But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things." The word of God. Thanks be to God.
Have you guys been blessed this morning? I just want to give a big shout out to each of our families who have been involved today in this service. It is an honor to be able to be part of this church community and to see our kiddos up here and their families up here really does bring warmth to my heart and a little bit of tears to my eyes, if I'm being brutally honest with you. The praise team got me. So I am incredibly thankful to be here with each and every single one of you this morning. Today, we are going to be concluding our sermon series, Family Matters. And over the last few weeks, we've been taking a look at different families within the Bible. We've been taking a look at Abraham and Sarah, Moses, Joseph, and a few others. However, today we're going to dive into the New Testament to a different family unit that we see, one of two sisters. Now, when I say sisters or sister, you may be thinking a few different things. This will either divide our congregation or bring us together. It may leave some of our younger friends a little clueless, but when you think of sister, you may think of this iconic 90s duo, Tia and Tamara. All right, how many of you watched that one before? All right, not as many as I, okay, all right. It's okay, I know you guys all love them. So this iconic 90s duo, sister. Or maybe you think of this 1954 film, White Christmas, with Betty and Judy Haynes singing, Sister, there's never been, no, I'm not a singer, devoted sisters. However, I remember watching both of these movies and show growing up, and I loved the sister dynamic. And I have the honor of not only having a sister, but of course being a sister. And this is my sister here. Her name is Holly. And I've talked a little bit about her before, but our family adopted her when I was about 10 years old, and she has something called Down syndrome. And it has just been a joy to be able to be her sister, but also learn from her as well. So Holly came into our life, like I said, when I was about eight years old, and I loved having a sister. Up to that point, I had been kind of an only child, and so I really craved that, like, hangout time with a sister to be able to, like, dress up together and wear matching clothes and just enjoy all of the things. And so when my sister came part of our lives, I was pumped. And so a couple of years went by, and we had separate rooms, and when I started high school, I thought it would be a great idea for us to share a room. Now, my parents said, you know, maybe that's not a great idea. Maybe we don't do that. But I was determined to have this, like, sister bonding time with her. And if I'm being brutally honest, she loves to clean. She also loves to fold laundry. And so I thought, you know, if she was in my room, maybe my room would be cleaner. But, you know, nonetheless, she loved this idea. And so my parents said, you know what, why don't we wait until the end of the school year and do a summer trial to figure out if this is a good fit for both of you guys. And I was like, okay, fine, that's fine. So summer came. And the first day of summer, I started to move her stuff into my room. We were excited. We had the music jamming. We were moving boxes and like her bed in. It took about 2 days to figure out where everyone's stuff was gonna go because it was a fairly small room. So we had to be really proactive about, you know, maybe we don't need this or maybe we don't need that. And so we got her bed into the room and we got all of her stuff and she helped me fold my laundry and we got it all tucked away and our room was looking amazing. This was what I had dreamed of. This like sister moment of us giggling and laughing and having a great time. However, bedtime did come. And at that moment, I realized I had made a vital mistake. Because my sister, even though she's an incredible human being, incredible, amazing, all of the things, and I love her with all my heart, I forgot that she loves talking to herself. Like, loves talking to herself. So much so that as soon as I went to sleep or tried to go to sleep, her performance began. She turned into like a one-woman show all of a sudden. It felt like a ticket to a play that I did not purchase. It was wild. She just kept talking and talking and talking. And I was getting more frustrated and more frustrated and more frustrated. And so finally, I called my parents up and I was like, listen, you need to come calm her down or something. I don't know if it's the joy of being in the same room together or what, but like, it's overwhelming. Please help. So my parents came up and they told her, like, Holly, like, it's time for bed. It's time to be quiet. And yet this still didn't work. And so I started to throw pillows at her. I thought maybe if I throw pillows at her, she'll get the cue that it's time to calm down, time to go to bed. But unfortunately, she thought it was a pillow fight, and so she started throwing pillows back at me. I was like, Holly, no, this is not. It's time for sleeping. So I became more and more frustrated. However, eventually, around like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, this woman on show really went on for a while. She finally started to be quiet and she went to sleep. However, this is also the second vital, most important thing that I forgot about my sister is that she snores so loud. So loud. I felt like the windows were shaking. I was like, what? This little lady has a lot of air to breathe or something. Like, what is happening? And so, needless to say, when we woke up early that morning, I told my parents this was not going to work out, and we spent the rest of the day returning her items to her room, and that was the end of our sharing room phenomenon. So our story ended up only being about less than 24 hours, but here's the thing. That's what sisters are, right? You love each other deeply, but sometimes you don't understand one another. You have different rhythms, different expectations, and if we're being honest, you have different priorities as well. And that's where we find ourselves in today's story. In Luke chapter 10, we step into another moment between sisters, Mary and Martha. And much like my story with my sister, one sister is carrying a load of responsibility and feeling overwhelmed, while the other seems a little unaware of the growing frustration around her. So let's take a look again at Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. It says, "Now they went on their way, and he entered a village where the woman named Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, and he came and asked, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." Tell her then to help me. But the Lord answered, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted about many things. This morning, we're going to take a look at more of a non-traditional look of this story. You see, it would be really easy for me to get up here and talk about the blatant story that is right in front of us in this chapter, in this story. A story of distraction, right? A story of how we need to be more focused and centered on what's in front of us. For example, like, I get distracted all the time. Like, I was saying this week in the office, my mind feels like that whack-a-mole game. Have you seen that? Where you just, like, the moles pop up and you just whack them? I sometimes feel like my mind is like that. I have so many tabs on, and, like, there are just so many things happening in my mind. So I get distracted really, really easily. However, in our world, we also get really distracted, right? We get distracted not only from people, but we get distracted from things happening in the world around us, maybe items, and we definitely get distracted by our phones, right? Like, probably half of you are looking at your phone right now, and you're, like, distracted by that. We all get distracted by so many different things. There's an article that I was reading this week that was in the Forbes magazine that says, our society is the most stressed and depressed and anxious and worried group of humans to ever walk the planet. He says, instead of dealing with our painful emotions, it's easier just to open an app and scroll until our thumbs are cramped. And just like we never get to the bottom of our Instagram's endless timelines, we never get to the end, the bottom of our emotions either. You see, distractions are everywhere. And if we're being honest, we're usually distracted a majority of the time. But I don't want to necessarily look at this idea today. There are so many other ideas, and this is a big overhauling one, but I also want to share a little bit of a different perspective that I see in this story. The point this morning that I want to make is that when we look over this text, our human nature is to pin Martha against Mary, to pin them against one another, because it's clearly one is sitting at the feet of Jesus and the other is busy worrying about everything that has to be done. However, I want us to share in our time together this morning to make it very clear that this is not a moment of competition or a moment of who is better than who. Because the work that Martha is doing is just as important. The work that Martha is doing is necessary and valued to those within her home. And as the older sister, she feels a responsibility to be the host and to ensure that her home is prepared for the guests that come into her home. If you're an older sister, I bet you imagine a little bit of weight within you and your family of thinking that you have to make sure that you have all of the things. Maybe you're the one who rallies the gift for the parents at Christmas time, or you're the one who plans the family vacations. This responsibility that Martha holds is great and dear. And so Mary, on the other hand, is doing not what no one expected. When we read in Luke chapter 10, it's easy to assume that Mary is the simple, quiet sister choosing a moment of silence in front of Jesus's feet. Mary wasn't just resting, though. Mary wasn't just resting. She was redefining her role. In a culture where spiritual learning was reserved for men, Mary took a posture of discipleship. She sat at Jesus' feet, listening intensely to his words. That phrase, sat at the Lord's feet, that we see in Luke 10, wasn't just a detail of explaining where she was sitting in the room or to allow us to have a better picture of what we see in this story, but it was a phrase used to describe the discipleship of somebody who was learning from a rabbi. This is a phrase that was used to say that those who were following and learning from a rabbi would sit at their feet. So this wasn't normal for a woman to be sitting at the feet of a rabbi. It wasn't expected, and in fact, it was almost inappropriate for Mary to be sitting at Jesus' feet. Mary had crossed into a space that traditionally was said she did not belong. And Martha's frustration, even though may have come across as something that was frustrating about the tasks that still had to be done and the things that still had to be cooked and had to be cleaned, but Martha may have also been frustrated about the fact that Mary was stepping out of bounds. She was breaking cultural codes. But Jesus didn't tell Mary to get back to the kitchen to cleaning and cooking, and he didn't tell Martha to stop her diligent work. He cared for both of them. You see, this picture and the text points to so many different places in which we could go this morning. However, one simple point that I want to make from this story is that faithfulness looks different for everyone. You see, when I started at Union College, that's where I did my undergrad, at Union College in Lincoln, Nebraska. How I ended up in Lincoln, Nebraska is a whole story, but I'm a West Coast girl. And so I went to Lincoln, Nebraska at Union College for college, and I got there knowing absolutely no one. And I walk into freshman orientation, and it immediately just felt weird and uncomfortable and a little bit awkward. And to make it even worse, they put us in our majors as freshman orientation. So all of the business majors were together, all of the nursing majors were together, all of the international rescue and relief majors were together, and that meant that all of the theology majors were together as well. Now, this wouldn't be weird or uncomfortable or anything like that, but I was the only woman in that department at that time. There was one other that was just about to graduate, but at freshman orientation, I was the only woman in that group. And so I went over to my group and I tried to get to know some of the guys, and, you know, there was instantly this, like, buddy-buddy, like, boys club type of mentality. And so I kind of sat towards the back of the group. And then at one point we decided, they broke us up into going to go see our classrooms and our departments and stuff like that. And when we got to our department, one of our future teachers sat us down around the conference table and said, please tell us a little, keyword, a little, about yourself and how you came into ministry, how you wanted to know that you wanted to be a pastor. And it was at that point that I realized I was in a room full of pastors, because this, like, little detail turned into like a sermon from each and every single one of them. It felt very unnecessary, the information that they were sharing. And so they went on and on for a while, and eventually it came to me. And as I sat there in that room of like 9 theology majors, I realized that as they were telling about themselves, telling about their journey to ministry, a lot of it was not necessarily like, I felt God like telling me to go into ministry. It was like, well, I've done preaching and I've baptized people and I led this evangelistic series. And it almost felt like they were trying to impress the professor. And so they got to me, and I genuinely hadn't done a lot of that. I hadn't done Bible studies with somebody before. I had never baptized them, and I felt really inadequate as I sat there and said, simply, I feel like God is calling me into ministry because I have a fire in my heart for it. I feel excited when I talk to people and when I share Jesus, and that's simply what I said. I felt really inadequate sitting there with a group of guys around me saying all that they had done. And so I shared my heart and I shared what was going on. However, friends, I left that area feeling not enough, feeling like my ministry was already off to a bad start. You see, it's human nature, it's human instincts to compare our journeys with others. My journey of getting to that space was just as valid as those who were preparing for those years, and just as valid because each of us are called to be there as well. Jesus calls us to different walks and never, never dictates our journey there. It's human instinct to compare your journey with everyone else, and maybe you see that desire, especially when you see two people in the same situation as what we see in Luke 10, handling things a little bit differently. However, let's be honest, it's easy to compare families as well, right? It's easy to compare within our own family units and even our own church families as well. You may be thinking, well, so-and-so is going to this college. What about my kid? Or maybe you're thinking, wow, so-and-so bought a house and I'm a little far behind and I don't think I'm going to buy a house right now. It's easy to compare the milestones in which we take. It's easy to compare the things that we don't have versus what others do have. And that's why when we read the story of Mary and Martha, we tend to want to declare a winner. One sitting and one is serving, one is spiritual and one seems a little bit distracted, but here's the truth. This isn't a competition between two distracted sisters or one distracted sister and one devoted one. This is a story about two different expressions of love, both shaped by the roles that they're carrying, the expectations that they're managing, and the way that each of them responds to the presence of Jesus. You see, Martha wasn't wrong for serving. In fact, hospitality in that time and in that culture was a deep sign of honor. She was doing something that was expected, responsible, and necessary. Now, let's not miss that the meal still had to be made and the home still needed to be ready and someone had to still take care of it. Martha was holding things together in that very environment in which Jesus was welcomed into. But Mary wasn't wrong either. She wasn't just stepping into something that no one expected of her. Her faithfulness didn't look like a meal. It looked like attention. It looked like stillness. What this story reminds us of is that the faithfulness doesn't come in a one-size-fits-all mold. It's not about doing more or doing less. It's not about choosing actions over contemplation or contemplation over action. If anything, I feel like this story here shares the importance of honoring the works and gift that each and every single one of us have been given. But also remembering that it's okay to take a break if it feels too much. It feels as if God is calling you to rest as well. It's okay to break social norms if it means sitting at the feet of Jesus. It's okay to step into spaces where others say you don't belong, especially if you hear Jesus inviting you into that space. And I want to go as far to say that it is just not a personal devotional life. It's about making room for everyone to come to that table, even people outside of our family. For women who have been told that their voices don't belong in spiritual leadership, Mary is our story. For immigrants and minorities pushed to the margins of systems that are traditions, Mary is your story. For those who have been silenced or overlooked or underestimated, Jesus' affirmation of Mary is also an affirmation to you. You see, the kingdom of God is not about preserving a power structure. It's about inviting people to the feet of Jesus, especially those who the world tries to keep out. So as followers of Jesus, we must ask ourselves, are we honoring the different ways people express their faith and calling? Are we making spaces at the table to protect those who can come and sit? Are we defending comfort or affirming people courageously following Jesus in unexpected places? And may I go as far to say that are we not only doing that within our church communities, but are we also leaving space for that within our homes as well? You see, faithfulness looks different for everyone. Sometimes it looks like you're doing your job that you are called to do, and other times it may look like you are doing a call that was not necessarily expected. It was early April 2020 when my mom called me that my sister was in the hospital. As you can imagine, April 2020, a lot of things were happening. The world was shut down with COVID, and a lot of things were on pause. And so at this time, I was actually pastoring in Minnesota, and my mom shared with me that the doctors thought that there was not a lot more time with my sister. And so because of the fear of COVID and like getting something and traveling on a plane, I decided to get in my car and just drive home. And so after I got off the phone with her, I packed my things in my car and I started to drive to Oregon. And about about 2 days later, I arrived in Oregon and went straight to the hospital. When I arrived at the hospital, the doctors said that she was in very serious condition and they were unsure of how much longer she would have. And so I sat there. I looked at my sister with tears in my eyes and I thought, man, 16 years together so far. She had come into our life when I was about 8 years old. And the best way to describe this relationship is that my Uncle Matthew, who also has Down syndrome, he goes to this day school. And so when we went to go pick him up at the day school, and Holly came over to us and said, Matthew invited me over for dinner. And we thought, wow, that's really sweet of Matthew, but also Matthew's nonverbal, so I don't know how he asked you to dinner, but like, come on over. And so we talked to her family, and her family said, yeah, she can come over for dinner. And so Holly came over for dinner at that time. I was about 8 years old, and it just felt like our family was complete with her. And so Holly would come over for dinners, and then eventually dinners turned into weekends, and weekends turned into weeks and months, and soon Holly was just living at our house. And so Holly's family was unable to care for her in the best possible way, and so when I was about 10 years old, she was legally adopted by our family, and we have had so many incredible, amazing memories with her. I remember when I was 10 years old, we came here to Disneyland, and it was just truly the happiest place on earth because I got to be here with my family and just experience all these things with her by my side. And so all these memories started flashing back, right? Like when we're in these deep moments of not only fear, but of reflection, we start to think of all these things that come up. And I looked at my sister, 16 years of being able to call her my sister, somebody who has been part of my family. And I just cried, imagining a world without her. And so the next 24 hours were really crucial. They were really careful, and they didn't know necessarily what was happening with her, but they did know that her lungs were full of fluid and there was other things going on. And so for the next 24 hours, they watched her and cared for her faithfully. And I sat there just taking in whatever I could, helping wherever I could. Fortunately, after a little bit of time, a few days later, Holly started to take a turn for the better and moved out of the ICU into a room upstairs in the hospital. They continued to monitor her and said they weren't 100% sure of when she would be released because they wanted to make sure she wouldn't backtrack a little bit. And so Holly was placed into this room in the hospital, and in came Julie, a nurse at that unit. Julie loved Holly because Holly has a little bit of a spunky personality. She's a little bit sassy, and Julie just really loved that. I remember Julie, the nurse, because she cared extraordinarily for Holly. She would bring pillows for Holly to be propped up so she could watch Jurassic Park, which is her favorite movies. Julie would bring in extra Sprite because she knew that Holly loved Sprite. And even when there was silence in the room, Julie would come in and just make sure that we were okay. A couple times we had a little dance party in the room. Holly loves David Bowie, and so we would jam out to David Bowie, and Julie would come in and she would start dancing and everything like that, and it would bring a smile to Holly's face. You see, Julie did the work which allowed my family and I to take a seat and sit and pause with Holly. As Holly got better, we valued the time that we were able to sit and pause. You see, in Luke 10, Jesus gently tells Martha and Mary that Mary has chosen what is better, that in that moment, the presence was more important than productivity. And friends, I don't think that Jesus was scolding Mary in this moment for working hard. I think that he was, in a loving, reminding way, telling her that sometimes the most important thing is to simply be with Jesus, to sit, to listen, and to be present, but still valuing the work that Martha did. So you see, I value Mary for demonstrating the ability to be bold in her faith and to be faithful in that way. And when I look back at Holly in the hospital, I'm reminded of the weight that I felt, the fear of the unknown, the exhaustion, but also I remember Julie. You see, Julie took care of the practical needs so that we could be present. She folded blankets so I could hold Holly's hand. She managed the charts so I could focus on Holly's care. And she cared for a space where we can just sit. You see, I value the work of the Martha. I value the heart of that endures everything to make sure that it is done, making sure that everyone around is cared for. And in a church, we need both. We need those who can sit and serve, those who can build and those who can listen, those who can speak boldly and those who can pray quietly. Comparison will kill our community, but if we honor the differences that each and every single one of us bring to the table, that is a family that we can build on. You see, maybe your role in the family or our church family feels a little quiet or unseen, or even a little bit small. But I want you to know that your work is not invisible. Your picking up the crayons in the pews when we leave church is vital and important, especially as summer comes. Please, thank you. Your work is seen and valued. Those who set up chairs and take down tables, your work is vital and important. Friends, let me tell you about Evelyn and Izzy, who came downstairs a couple months ago to the children's division and sharpened pencils and crayons for our children's ministries division. That is vital and important. That is beautiful work. Each of us have wonderful things that we can do to add to the community, to be part of that family. All that to say, church family, don't minimize your calling within this family just because it doesn't look like somebody else's. Know that your work is valued and seen. Today, after our service, we have 41 different ministries that you can be involved in, that you can either sit and pray with or engage and serve in the 92505. This is our opportunity to be part of the ministry that is happening here, the opportunities to be part of a ministry as a family. So in that way, that's what Jesus was doing with Martha. He wasn't dismissing her efforts. He was simply inviting her to pause, to breathe, to be in the sacred moment that he was saying, come and sit with me. I value you. I see you and I love you. Come and be with me. So today, whether you're a Mary or Martha, don't forget that your faithfulness and presence is valued and seen and loved in this community.